This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It was just a couple of days ago that my guest Seymour Hersh reported in The New Yorker that the Bush administration has intensified planning for a possible major air attack against Iran to stop its nuclear program. Yesterday, the president of Iran announced that it has joined the nuclear countries of the world. It has succeeded in enriching uranium. Although Iran says it's for nuclear power, the international community believes Iran is working on nuclear weapons in defiance of the United Nations. Seymour Hersh won a Pulitzer Prize for breaking the story of the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. In 2004, he broke the story of abuses in Abu Ghraib prison. I asked him if yesterday's announcement by the Iranian president put Hersh's current New Yorker report in a new light.
The fact is that what he said yesterday was old hat. They've already done that before. They have successfully enriched uranium in a small pilot project, and that's what they did yesterday. They ran a string of 164 centrifuges, which was more complicated. They ran it for a certain number of hours. There's a great deal of skepticism in the American intelligence community, also among our allies, and also among the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, offices in Vienna, as to how competent the Iranians are in all of this. They're certainly years and years away from being able to master the process of enriching uranium at a large scale, thousands and thousands of centrifuges running constantly. You have to do that to generate enough uranium to make a weapon. So they're not there yet.
Now, you report in The New Yorker that the Bush administration has intensified planning for a possible attack. You know, newspapers around the world have been summarizing your article, but I'm going to ask you to give us a very brief summary for anyone who hasn't yet read your article or read the summary of it.
Well, the one part the newspapers and previous interviews I've done, have gotten wrong is not wrong. It's just an emphasis. They keep on saying the article says that Bush is planning to use tactical nuclear weapons in Iraq. What has happened, of course, is that there's always contingency planning. This is a staple of any major superpower. We do contingency planning for everything. In the last 6 months, I'm not good on time, 4 months, something in the last recent period, the planning's become operational. It's gone to the next phase, which is far more than just some vague contingency planning on a shelf. They're specifically drawing up target lists. And as I wrote in the article, we've sent teams of Americans undercover to begin to acquire what kind of information we need on the ground about the targets we may be bombing from the air. And so it's really escalating. That doesn't mean the president has decided to go to war, but it's put everything up a notch. As part of that planning, the military, when they're asked by the president to destroy something, give them a panoply of options. One of the major facilities that we know about, and I should add that much of what Iran does in the nuclear business, we don't know much about. Our intelligence isn't perfect. But the one place we have a fix on is called Natanz, where the enrichment that the Iranians announced yesterday took place. It's an underground bunker complex, quite big, 75 feet underground under hard rock, a few hundred miles away from Tehran. In order to successfully bomb that, the president was told, we can guarantee 100% destruction with a TAC nuke. That was in a paper. A few weeks or so afterwards, the Joint Chiefs, realizing that this is, you know, perhaps even all along knowing that was just an option and wacko, you don't want to start using nuclear weapons in the Middle East against a Muslim country, went back to the White House and said, let's get this out of our plan. They tried to walk it back out. The White House then said, no, you profited. Let's keep it in there. At this point, there was a lot of tension among some generals and admirals. I can't say everybody, but among some about this, simply because they do not want the nuclear option in the package.
Why not? And is this like crossing a line that's been taboo until now?
It's a lot of complicated reasons. One would be among many military people, it's, believe it or not, real men don't use nukes. You know, we go out and get them hand to hand or whatever. The distinction between nukes and bombs is a little, there is one they see. Secondly, there's a huge disconnect. We're seeing signs of it now in public. Various generals and these three generals, two Army guys and a Marine, in the last few weeks writing very critical essays about Rumsfeld. There's a huge disconnect between the military leadership and the civilian leadership in the Pentagon. That's for sure. The civilians in the Pentagon, many of what we would call neoconservatives, very hardliners, American Enterprise School, the guys that brought us Ahmed Shalabi, that crowd is still there. There's also a huge disconnect, I'm learning, between this, many of the senior leaders and the White House. And so, therefore, the military guys simply wanted this option. And there's also an ethical sense that you don't even plan or talk about using a nuclear weapon in this kind of a situation. We're talking about a preemptive, unilateral targeting of another country that isn't nuclear at this point, isn't a direct threat. This changes the equation. Why would you want to even get into this kind of thinking as a superpower, particularly when there are other powers in the country, in the world, six or seven other nuclear powers? Why do you want to decide that because you're the nuclear power, you can target anybody? So they tried to walk it back, as I said. If what I wrote, and things may change because there's a tremendous amount of heat on this because of this article on the institution. Believe me, there is inside. But the chairman or one of the senior officials in the Joint Chiefs was going to do a paper, take it to the president, and insist that and basically give him a formal recommendation that nuke planning should be off the board. At that point, the president would have no option. It's believed, but to go along, you can't counterman what the military tells you directly. And if the president still insisted on keeping the nuclear option in the planning, guys were saying they would resign, not necessarily publicly, but they would resign. It just may mean taking retirement early, but they would get out of there.
Is it your impression that most of the military leaders now are opposed to the use of a tactical nuclear weapon in Iran?
I just can't say that. I have a very small window. I talk to people. But you have to understand, the people I talk to, I've known some of them for decades, and the people I talk to are inside. They're very loyal to the United States. They're loyal to the military, the function of the military. They're almost idealistic. They're troubled by this government as much as many of the people on the outside are. They're troubled about the president's inability to cope with the reality about Iraq. They don't want Iran to go nuclear, but they don't know why the president is choosing now to say, as he has said repeatedly in public, that if Iran crosses a red line, and the president's red line is simply what the Iranians announced they did yesterday, any enrichment of uranium, he said, is a red line. He's also said in the last few weeks that even gaining the knowledge of the bomb is a red line. And he's also, in the last few weeks, repeatedly said all options are on the table. That is, he and the vice president, Mr. Cheney, also said that. All options are on the table. The bellicosity out of America is stunning. It inevitably results in the Iranians concluding that the faster we can get going on this nuclear business, the better off we are, because these guys are coming.
You write that there's a growing conviction among members of the U.S. military and in the international community that President Bush's ultimate goal in the nuclear confrontation with Iran is regime change. And one former defense official said the military planning was based on a belief that a sustained bombing campaign in Iran will humiliate the religious leadership and lead the public to rise up and overthrow the government. And I'm wondering how the problems we're having in Iraq now and the loss of confidence that the American public has in the war, and the fact that Iraq seems to be either in or on the verge of civil war, seems to be affecting the Bush administration thinking on the use of force in Iran. Did any of your sources talk to you about that, about how what's happening in Iraq is figuring into plans for Iran?
Well, one obvious, very indirect response or reaction to the complete debacle in Iraq is that people are talking to me so straightforwardly about the planning on Iran. And in other words, nobody wants to get us into the senior military guys who are perfectly aware how bad things are. And if you remember John Murtha, the congressman from Pennsylvania, last, I think, November, went public with a very stunning statement because he's such a conservative. And so, known to be so military, he's a ranking member of the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee, which he handles the money for the budget for the Pentagon. When he said what he said, the war is over, we got to get out, he was reflecting because he is known to me and to some of my people I know, my friends, as the insider. He's the one man that the generals, the four stars, the Joint Chiefs and others talk to privately. In other words, they come and let down their hair. When he said what he said, he was reflecting really the view. And it, of course, the next rush you heard was the rush of the Democrats running away from him, his own party. And nobody wanted to be associated with that, which is stunning. We'll deal with Congress some other time in our life. But in any case, They know it's basically a lose-lose in Iraq, and they don't want to see it replicated in Iran. So that's one result. I also think if you're a president, I have been told, I haven't written this, but I have been told that one of the major reasons we're fighting so hard to get rid of Jafari, the Shiite leader who won more votes and should be the prime minister of Iraq, the reason we're lobbying so hard to the point that even Jack Straw, the British foreign minister, and Condoleezza Rice, our secretary of state, went publicly there the other week to endorse another candidate, Mahdi. One reason is Jafari's going to call for our withdrawal. He's going to, if he becomes prime minister, he's now the leading candidate for the job. He's won the most votes. If he gets in office, he's going to ask for us to get out. So if you're George Bush and you're looking towards a summer in which you're going to explain to the American people why after 3 years, perhaps $1 trillion, 2,500 lives, 2,400 lives anyway, five died yesterday. The death toll in Iraq's growing enormously. It's been a very bad month for American military men there. He has to explain to the American people why we're being told to get out. I can understand politically the attractiveness of declaring you're going to go after this mouthy Iranian president who's always threatening Israel and his nuclear weapon system. That would be seen as perhaps by the White House as a plus, a political plus.
Now, there's been a lot of responses to your report in The New Yorker that the Bush administration is planning for an attack against Iran. Responses include that there are plans on the table, sure. Every conceivable plan is on the table. That doesn't mean we're seriously considering doing it. In The New York Times today, there's a report that at the Pentagon and elsewhere in the administration, officials say the prospect of military action remains remote in the short term and highly problematic beyond that. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has simply said, it's simply not useful to get into fantasy land, your article basically being fantasy land. Do any of these reactions jive with the impressions you've gotten from how serious the planning is?
The planning is totally serious, and it's operational planning. And people across the board, not only inside the American military, inside the political establishment, I quote a senior member of the House Appropriations Committee is saying that the president has begun briefing various, mostly conservative members of Congress about his plans and getting their support. This is going on. But let me say, Terry, that the purpose in people talking to me about this, and this whole issue came up a few months ago among people I've known for many years, if my story works, the precise things you're hearing now will be the result. The people talked to me in the hopes that if it was taken public, I literally told one of the people who started telling me about what was going on and the fear they had of this messianic president is going to do something. And I said to this one gentleman I've known for many years, in a sense, I said, what the hell do you want me to do about it? I can't write a speculative story. And he said, go to Vienna, talk to the IAEA, find out how far away they are. This is an issue that doesn't have to be raised now. Go to work and do it. And so I did. Because there was no question, there is no question today that this president, not in the back of the mind, in the front, right there, wants to do something. He wants to do something about Iran. I quoted people in the article as saying he views Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president, as an Adolf Hitler. He sees this Iran as Germany, Nazi Germany in 1935. That's the analogy that they use in the White House. I've heard two different people tell me that analogy who meet there. And so when you have this sort of a situation, in other words, wouldn't the world have been better off if we did something about Hitler then rather than letting the war begin? And this is the attitude that I was told existed. And I was also told, as I said, you know, if my story works, we'll have the kind of talk we have from the Pentagon yesterday.
Well, you know, in keeping with what you've been hearing about the president's thoughts about how important it is to take action now and how he compares the president of Iran to Hitler, Robert Baer, a former CIA agent, who his memoir is the basis of the film Syriana, he told you that the president of Iran and his Revolutionary Guard are, quote, capable of making a bomb, hiding it, and launching it at Israel. He says, they're apocalyptic Shiites. These guys are nuts, and there's no reason to back off. So
yes.
how strong is that feeling, do you think, within the intelligence community, the military, and the Bush White House that you're dealing with people who are nuts in Iran, and if they get a bomb, the whole world's in trouble, or in the short term, some countries, including Israel, are in trouble, and so we can't back off.
Baer is interesting on that because Robert Baer spent much of his career, he was an undercover agent, he speaks very good Arabic, and he's one of the few CIA agents who really could live undercover. And one of the things he did, to his enormous credit, was in the 80s, he really pursued the assassination of a man named William Buckley, a CIA station chief who was kidnapped and then killed. He also investigated the Iranian/Hezbollah connection to the bombing of the American embassy and the bombing of the Marines in Lebanon in the early 80s. So unfortunately, it's his belief that the Revolutionary Guards and the Iranian president right now, Ahmadinejad, were deeply involved in this. And so he comes at it with a very strong point of view that I respect. Having said that, I can also tell you that in my reporting for this story, I spent a lot of time with some of our allies, with those countries who, unlike us, have had diplomatic relationships with Tehran and have done a great deal of research and study and thinking about how that government is run. Now, we're a country that we have not had any diplomatic relations since the Shah was overthrown in, 79. But among our allies who have had tremendous contact there and really lived there and watched the country, there's a strong belief that the Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader, is really in control, that the Revolutionary Guards, as powerful as they are, and they are getting more powerful, still have to defer to him. And he is a very difficult to understand cleric, power structure in Iraq, in Iran. I read some papers that, I mean, they're just, it's very nuanced how the decisions are made. And when you get beyond just the simple who does what, but the fact is that it's a very pragmatic country. Most people think that despite what the president says of Iran right now, his mouthiness, as I say, this is not Saddam Hussein. They're not interested in being blown up by the United States. They know what the cost of a war would be. They've come to us before. They want to talk to us. They've came in 03 and even talked, so I'm told, about recognizing Israel. What's the price? What can we do? They came and wanted bilateral conversations, which this president will refuse to do. They're still looking for bilateral conversations. Why not talk to the Iranians?
Three retired generals have called for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Anthony Zinni, Paul Eaton, and Gregory Newbold. Do you have any idea from all of your sources if that's likely to happen? And how much, also like how much discontent is there within the military at Rumsfeld's leadership?
Oh, it's been there for years. Rumsfeld has intervened in the most significant ways. He intervenes in the selection process between who's going to be a three-star general, who's going to be a four-star. Usually secretaries of defense stay out of that business. It's the services business to pick their generals. He intervenes on all levels. He's completely uprooted the host system of the Pentagon in terms of he believes in special forces. He wants his office to have some direct control in running it. He's cutting into the power of the Joint Chiefs and the service secretaries on a number of issues. And so he's pretty much, and he doesn't listen, all these complaints I've been hearing for years. You're hearing them more and more. The three generals who spoke out are just but the tip of an iceberg. Many more inside, for a lot of reasons, don't want to talk. There's a great deal of acrimony, to put it mildly, and it's only getting worse. But he's still Secretary of Defense. You know, in my book, I've been watching these guys since 9/11, you know, writing my little alternative history of this group. And if you think, I the key players, of course, are Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. It's the threesome. There's no way they're ever going to fire Rumsfeld. He's so much more important to them inside than going outside and sniping. They won't have that. He may quit. If he does, it'll be his decision. At the height of Abu Ghraib, as you know, I did a lot of writing on Abu Ghraib. There was a lot of speculation he'd be fired then. I remember telling everybody then, because I know something about how these guys work. No way he's going to be fired. And if you want to know why, it's because this policy is a continuous continuity. What you saw in Abu Ghraib and what you see now, it all comes back to the same small group of people in the White House, the president and the vice president. Rumsfeld is a part of that process.
Any concluding thoughts that you have that you'd like to leave us with?
Yes. One thought that I have, which is this. In all of the conversations I've had about this in the last 3 months, more than that, and hundreds, and all of the talking, the one thing that nobody's ever suggested is that there was any official reckoning or accounting or estimate of how many civilian casualties would be result if we did an all-out bombing or even a partial bombing of Iran, a country with 80 million people, most of whom are instinctively pro-American and anti-cleric. That seems to be just a dreadful, dreadful fact.
Seymour Hersh, thank you very much for talking with us.
Great, Terry.
Seymour Hersh's article about planning for a possible airstrike against Iran is in the current edition of The New Yorker.